This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Dimitri Fotopoulos. Chapter 16. What happened to our two travelers, with two girls, two monkeys, and two savages called Aurelians? Candide by Voltaire. Candide and his valet had already passed the frontier before it was known that the German Jesuit was dead. The way Cacumbo had taken care to fill his wallet with bread, chocolate, some ham, some fruit, and a few bottles of wine. They penetrated with their Andalusian horses into a strange country where they could discover no beaten path. At length, a beautiful meadow, intersected with purling rills, opened to their view. Cacumbo proposed to his master to take some nourishment, and he set him an example. "How can you desire me to feast upon ham when I have killed the baron's son and am doomed never more to see the beautiful Cunegonde? What will it avail me to prolong a wretched life that must be spent far from her in remorse and despair? And then what will the journal of Travouk say?" was Candide's reply. While he was making these reflections, he still continued eating. The sun was now on the point of setting, when the ears of our two wanderers were assaulted with cries, which seemed to be uttered by a female voice. They could not tell whether these were cries of grief or joy. However, they instantly started up. Full of their inquietude and apprehension, which a strange place naturally inspires, the crisis proceeded from two young women who were tipping disrobed along the mean, while two monkeys followed close at their heels, biting at their limbs. Candide was touched with compassion. He had learned to shoot while he was among the Bulgarians and could hit a filbert in a hedge without touching a leaf. Accordingly, he took up his double-barreled Spanish gun, pulled the trigger, and laid the two monkeys lifeless on the ground. "God be praised, my dear Cacumbo. I have rescued two poor girls from a most perilous situation. If I have committed a sin in killing a Lancaster and a Jesuit, I have made ample amends by saving the lives of these two distressed damsels. Who knows but that they may be young ladies of a good family, and that the assistance I have been so happy to give them may procure us great advantage in the country." He was about to continue when he felt himself stuck, speechless, at seeing the two girls embracing the dead bodies of the monkeys in the tenderest manner, bathing their wounds with their tears, and rendering the air with the most dreadful lamentations. "Really," said he to Cacumbo, "I should not have expected to see such a prodigious share of a good nature." "Master," replied the knowing valet, "you have made a precious piece of work of it. Do you know that you have killed the lovers of those two ladies?" "Their lovers? Cacumbo, you are jesting. It cannot be. I can never believe it." "Dear sir," replied Cacumbo, "you are surprised at everything. Why should you think it so strange that there should be a country where monkeys institute themselves into the good graces of the ladies? They are the fourth part of a man, as I am the fourth part of a Spaniard. "Alas," replied Candide, "I remember to have heard my master Pangloss say that such accidents as these frequently cannot pass in former times, and that these commixtures are productive of centaurs, fauns, and satyrs, and that many of the ancients had been such monsters, but I looked upon the whole as fabulous." "Now you are convinced," said Cacambo. "That is very true, and you see what use is made of these creatures by persons who have not had a proper education. All I am afraid of is that these same ladies may play us some ugly trick." These judicious reflections operated so far on Candide as to make him quit the meadow and strike into a thicket. There he and Cacambo stopped, and after heartily cursing the Grand Inquisitor, the governor of Buenos Aires, and the baron, they fell asleep on the ground. When they awoke, they were surprised to find that they could not move. The reason was that the Aurelians who inhabit that country, and to whom the ladies had given information of these two strangers, had bound them with cords made of the bark of trees. They saw themselves surrounded by 50 naked Aurelians, armed with bows and arrows, clubs and hatchets, a flint. Some were making a fire under a large cauldron, and the others were preparing splints, crying out, one and all, "A Jesuit! A Jesuit! We shall be revenged! We shall have excellent cheer! Let us eat this Jesuit! Let us eat him up!" "I told you, master," cried Cacambo mournfully, "that these two wretches could pay us some scurvy trick." Candide, seeing the cauldron and the splints, cried out, "I suppose they are going either to boil or roast us." Ah, what would Pangloss say if he were to see how pure nature is formed? Everything is right. It may be so, but I must confess it is something hard to be benefit of dear Miss Cunegonde, and to be spitted like a rabbit by those barbarous Aurelians. Cacambo, who never lost his patience of mind in distress, said to the disconsolate Candide, "Do not despair. I understand a little of the jargon of these people. I will speak to them." "Aye, pray do," said Candide, "and be sure to make them sensible of the horrid barbarity of boiling and roasting human creatures, and how little of Christianity there is in such practices." "Gentlemen," said Cacambo, "you think perhaps you are going to feast upon a Jesuit. If so, it is mighty well. Nothing can be more agreeable to justice than thus to treat your enemies. Indeed, the law of nature teaches us to kill our neighbor, and accordingly, we find this practice all over the world. And if we do not indulge ourselves in eating human flesh, it is because we have much better fare. But for your parts, who have not such resources as we, it is certainly much better judged to feast upon your enemies than to throw our bodies to the fowls of the air, and thus lose all the fruit of your victory." "But surely, gentlemen, you would not choose to eat your friends. You imagine you are going to roast a Jesuit, whereas my master is your friend, your defender, the very man who has, so far from being a Jesuit, gives me leave to tell you that he has very lately killed one of that order, whose spoils he now wears, and which have probably occasioned your mistake. To convince you of the truth of what I say, take the habit he has on and carry it to the first barrier of the Jesuits' kingdom, and inquire whether my master did not kill one of these officers. There will be little or no time lost by this, and you may still reserve our bodies in your power to feast on if you should find what we have told you to be false. But on the contrary, if you find it to be true, I am persuaded you are too well acquainted with the principles of the laws of society, humanity, and justice, not to use us courteously and suffer us to depart unhurt. This speech appeared to be very reasonable to the Aurelians. They deputed two of their people with all expedience to inquire into the truth of this affair, who acquitted themselves of their commission like men of sense, and soon returned with good tidings for our distressed adventurers. Upon this, they were loosed, and those who were so lately going to roast and boil them now showed them all sorts of civilities, offered them girls, gave them refreshments, and reconducted them to the confines of their country, crying before them all the way in token of joy, "He is no Jesuit. He is no Jesuit." Candide could not help admiring the cause of his deliverance. "What men! What manners!" cried he. "If I had not fortunately run my sword up to the hilt in the body of Miss Cunigan's brother, I should have certainly been eaten alive. But after all, pure nature is an excellent thing, since these people, instead of eating me, showed me 1,000 civilities as soon as they knew I was not a Jesuit." End of chapter 16.